Good afternoon and welcome. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. In February, when former Maryland Governor Larry Hogan made a last-minute entrance in the Republican primary for the U.S. Senate, the race in the Democratic primary for the nomination to succeed Ben Cardin took on a new level of national significance. With a razor-thin majority for Democrats in the Senate and competitive races in places like Arizona, Ohio, and Montana, Maryland now figures prominently in the Republican strategy to take back the majority in the upper chamber. The two leading candidates in the Democratic primary for the Senate are Prince George's County Executive Angela Alsobrooks and 6th District Congressman David Trone. Today on Midday, we had hoped to have a conversation with both Mr. Trone and Ms. Alsobrooks to talk about the issues and why they each think that they are best suited to beat Larry Hogan, who is the likely Republican nominee. Angela Alsobrooks accepted our invitation. David Trone did not. He has chosen instead to hold a press conference in Silver Spring at this hour to announce some endorsements. So we will spend the most of our hour today speaking with County Executive Alsobrooks. She has led Prince George's, which is Maryland's second largest county, since 2018. She is the first black woman to lead any county in Maryland history, and if she is elected to the U.S. Senate, she'll be the first woman to serve in the Maryland congressional delegation since Barbara Mikulski and Representative Donna Edwards left office in 2017. She would also become one of only three black women senators in U.S. history. A former prosecutor, County Executive Alsobrooks served as the state's attorney in Prince George's County from 2011 to 2018. She had been an assistant state's attorney in the county for 14 years prior to that. Angela Alsobrooks is 53 years old. She lives in Prince George's County, where she was born and raised. She received a BA from Duke University and a law degree from the University of Maryland School of Law. She is the mother of a daughter who is a student at Spelman College. Angela Alsobrooks joins me here in Studio A. You are welcome to join us as well. Our number 410-662-8780. Our email midday at WIPR.org. Madam County Executive, welcome back. Good to see you.
Oh, thank you. It's so great to be back.
So the thing that's on a lot of Democrats' minds right now is electability. And this notion of going up against a very popular former governor, Larry Hogan. How do you see Mr. Hogan's strengths and weaknesses? If you are the nominee, where do you think Larry Hogan, who, you know, has a 68% or had a 68% approval rating among Democrats when he left office, where do you see his weaknesses in a matchup head to head?
Well, you know, first of all, let me just say I am so grateful for the amazing coalition of support that I've been able to develop across the state. This coalition includes people, not only grassroots activists and leaders across the state, but everyday people from all walks of life have really come to this campaign. We have developed a very large tent. That tent is going to be really necessary to be successful in the general election. What we have to do, the Democratic Party has to nominate, and I believe I am that person, a person who inspires the base of our party to bring out women, to bring out younger voters, to bring out voters of every walk of life to come out and to be excited and inspired to vote. That's going to be important to our strategy. The strategy cannot be bring out people who can vote just against Larry Hogan. We have to put up a candidate for whom people are excited to vote for. In this race, I am the person who can beat Larry Hogan. What we've seen so far is $57 million have been spent to buy a race. And even after $57 million, I am not only deadlocked with my opponent, but on course to win the primary in this race. And I know that I am also the strongest person to defeat Larry Hogan in the fall, because again, after $57 million, what we have also seen is not a single poll that has shown my opponent ahead of Hogan. I am going to not only be able to continue to build on this coalition, but we have also many, many policies. Larry Hogan is not pro-choice. He's a person who we know will be voting with the Republican caucus on issues that are of concern to Marylanders. Everything from sensible gun legislation to who we appoint on the Supreme Court, what we do about comprehensive immigration reform, climate. These are all issues that are of concern to Marylanders, and the vast majority of the Maryland demographic are Democratic. They support Democratic policies on these issues, and Larry Hogan does not.
So there's, you know, an awful lot of voters who in the Democratic Party who appear to have been very satisfied with Mr. Hogan's performance as governor. Being a governor and a senator are two different things. There's that. There's the issue of whether Senate, a majority of the Senate is Democrat or Republican. So there's that part of it. But when it comes to, saying, well, Hogan wasn't bad. He was a good governor. So I'm inclined to like him. And they may look at David Trone, your main opponent in this race, and say, well, he's kind of Hogan light or something. So do you approach this? Would you approach it running against Mr. Hogan as, you know, sharply drawing the distinctions between you and he? Or do you approach it more like, well, you know, I know he was very popular. There's a lot of places where we agree. I'm willing to work across the aisle. You know, Mr. Hogan would phrase it as common sense solutions. Do you see what I'm asking? Is it a sharp contrast, yeah, or is it no? You know, I understand the things that he did that were popular, and I would, you know, continue some of those.
Well, let me tell you what the issue is here. And this is something I think voters will see very clearly, is that we are looking not just at Mr. Hogan, but at his party, the Republican Party that is in this moment led by Donald Trump. So when we talk about sensible, that Larry Hogan was sensible, his party is not sensible. And the party is led by Donald Trump. And Larry Hogan was recruited to this race by Mitch McConnell, a person a week after bringing Larry Hogan in and declaring that Larry Hogan was the get of the year. Mitch McConnell then endorsed Donald Trump. So what we know, and I know Marylanders will understand, is we couldn't have a race where the stakes could be any higher. A party where Larry Hogan very clearly will be voting with the Republican caucus on issues that we care about, including things like Affordable Care Act. The thing that Donald Trump has said in his party, they would love to roll back the Affordable Care Act that has provided millions of new Americans the opportunity to have health care, to include their kids. Like me, I have an 18-year-old daughter who I can now keep on my insurance until she's 26. We know where sensible gun legislation is concerned, this epidemic of violence that has been, we have seen leaders who have been unable and unwilling to have the courage to ban AR-15s, to close up the gun show loophole, to have the kind of legislation that allows us to remove ghost guns. We know where the Supreme Court is concerned. There's a very real possibility that the next president and this next Senate body will be able to confirm a member of the Supreme Court. And we know that Larry Hogan will vote in that case with his caucus and appoint conservative justices who do not support a woman's right to choose, where abortion rights would be concerned, where so many other LGBTQ, we think about so many other voting rights. And so he will be voting with the Republican caucus. And so it is not in this case, I think what voters will be able to see very clearly. This is not a question of whether or not we think Larry Hogan's a nice guy. I work with Larry Hogan, worked very well with him as county executive to get things done. In this moment, what we're talking about is whether what direction we want to see our country take. The Republican Party has one view of it. The Democratic Party has another view. And I think Marylanders will not agree with the vision of our country that the Republican Party, led by Donald Trump, has in this moment.
Angela also Brooks is a candidate in the Democratic primary for the U.S. Senate. She's the county executive in Prince George's County. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. We do have a number of calls and emails, and I want to get to them. But I want to ask you as well, your opponent, David Trone, who, again, we invited to come and be with us today, and he declined that invitation. I by no means want to be a surrogate for Mr. Trone, but one of the arguments he's making about the money, you mentioned that he's, you know, already loaned himself $57 million. It's the most expensive race by far in the state of Maryland, one of the most expensive races in the country. You've raised just under $8 million, I guess, right, for this race, which is still a whole lot of money, but dwarfed by what Mr. Trone has spent of his own personal fortune. He's saying that because of the money, because I have so much, I have sort of these kinds of resources, that when the Republican National Committee pours in lots of resources behind a Larry Hogan general election campaign, he'll be able to match it, and that's one of the things that makes him more electable. How do you respond to that?
Again, it is worth repeating. After spending $57 million in this race, there is not a single poll that shows Mr. Trone ahead of Larry Hogan. This is important. And so what we know is that the money in this case, in his case, will not be enough. We instead have to have not only the resources, and by the way, I want everyone to remember, I am a prolific fundraiser. I have raised more money as a Senate candidate than any Senate candidate in the history of our state. So I will continue to raise money. We will see also the resources come in, not only from the National Democratic Party, but others. And so we'll be able to raise money. But even after that is the case, we have to have a candidate for whom people are excited and inspired to come out and vote for, not just voting against Larry Hogan, but we have to have a candidate who can inspire the base of this party, women, younger voters, voters from all backgrounds. That's what I do. Gathering rooms. We've had over the last few weeks rooms, Tom, with hundreds of excited supporters, voters who are coming into these rooms. This is the coalition that is going to require to beat Larry Hogan, that will beat Larry Hogan, and we will have the resources that are necessary to defeat him. But again, if my opponent could not, first of all, get a single poll ahead of Hogan, and in this race, he's tied with me, and we're on course to win the race. You can tell that because he's gone negative. He's gone negative in these, but you don't do that if you're winning a race. And so he's not in this moment. The $57 million will not be enough. You have to also have a coalition, a message, and a vision.
How do you respond to his contention that he is unbought because he's spending all this money on his own? He's not doing what you're having to do, which is raise money from various sources. But because he's not raising any money himself, he's spending his own money. He's not beholden to anybody.
Well, I think, you know, what we should read from that is that what he really means is he's unaccountable. It is not that he's unbought. He contributes money and by his own, let's use his own words. He said he writes checks to buy access. He has done that. He's learned this better than anyone to support the candidacies of these radical Republicans who have passed some of the most restrictive anti-abortion laws in the country, hundreds of thousands of dollars in his personal capacity, and also hundreds of thousands in his company, in his company, to support Republicans who, first of all, do not support choice, but who have also, he supported them against good Democratic candidates. Republicans who do not believe, for example, Brian Kemp, who took hundreds of thousands of voters off the voting rolls. He supported Greg Abbott of Texas, the governor. He has supported Ken Paxton, the attorney general there. And so he's a one-man super PAC. You have to read through the lines with him. It is not that he accepts money. He gives it to buy access, which is what he said, and he does it very, very liberally. And so what he really means by unbought is he's unaccountable, that he believes that he can write checks to people and to causes to gain access. That's his words. And I think this is a concerning factor.
Let's go to the phones. Janet is on the line from Baltimore County. Welcome to the program with Angela Alsobrooks.
Good afternoon. I'm really glad to hear you say that the Democratic base would be energized when you win the Senate race, the primary. But my question is this. Different people decide to run for office based on different things that may be happening in their life or around the state or around the country. I'm curious as to what motivated you to run for the U.S. Senate.
Well, thank you so much, Janet, for calling. You know, you're right about motivations. I am a person who was raised, first of all, in a working class family. Two beautiful parents, a mother who was a receptionist, a father who was a newspaper distributor for the Washington Post and a car salesman. Together, my parents raised me to believe and know that I had an obligation to care for my neighbors. They also taught me that it was education, for example, that was a great equalizer in this country. And I believe with everything I have that families, that we all want the same things for our families, and that every family wants to live in safe and affordable places, that we want health care when our loved ones are sick, that we want for our kids the single best education possible. And we want also economic opportunity. I have worked over the last 27 years to provide that for our communities. And in this moment, I believe that we need and deserve a person in the Senate who not only has the record of having done those things, but we need people in office also who understand and who share the cares and concerns of the people they represent. That is what I offer, is a record of delivering. But also, I believe that it's important to know the people. And I, as I look in the Senate, It is often the case that I believe that there are experiences, lived experiences, that are not there. For example, the experience of women. I look at my own daughter. She deserves to have someone in our delegation. If you look at our 10-person delegation, we don't have the voices of women. All 10 members of our delegation are men. They have been men of distinction. But I think it is important also to have the lived experiences of every single one of us, of every race, gender, and background, to make our policies more complete. And so these are some of the things that really motivate me: a belief in family, a belief that I have the record to really drive great results for Marylanders, as well as a vision around fighting for everyday hardworking families.
Let me give you a chance to respond to another one of the accusations or one of the data points that Mr. Trone has tried to make in some of these ads. And that has to do with the people in Prince George's County. And he has an ad in which a number of people from Prince George's, which is, you've been the county executive there now for a bit, have endorsed him. Now, you've gotten endorsements from Governor Moore, from Senator Van Hollen, from Congressman Sarbanes, from a whole long list of other prominent people in Maryland government and in the federal government. But how do you respond to the fact that these people, Aisha Braveboy, who's the state's attorney there, or even the Maryland Attorney General Anthony Brown, also a Prince Georgian, have chosen to endorse your opponent?
Well, I'll say this: after spending $57 million trying to buy the race, my opponent has now used his millions to attack me. And what I can say about the support is, I am so proud to have the support of over 170 leaders from across the state, including over 40. Elected from Prince George's County. So it would be short-sighted of me to focus on not having the support of four or five people when I have over 40 elected officials in Prince George's County, the chair of our county council, the chair of the House delegation, the chair of the Senate delegation, and the support of so many in our county and across the state. Governor Moore, Congressman Mfume, Congressman Raskin, Ivy, Sarbanes. And so, in other words, all of Mr. Trone's colleagues in the Congress, except one in our Maryland delegation, have endorsed me. The people who work with both of us, Senator Van Hollen, all of the people who work with him in our Maryland delegation, all except two, have decided to endorse me. And so I'm grateful for the people who have endorsed and look forward to continuing to work with them.
You're a former prosecutor. Now you've been a county executive for 7 years. We have a question from a listener, Edward. What is it about being a county executive that makes you suited to be a U.S. senator? Different kind of thing, a legislative body as opposed to an executive position. Why do you believe that your experience is the best?
Thank you so much, Edward, for that question. I'm glad he did ask it. I think it's important to have, many people think that voting is all that happens. You vote. I understand how to pass policy, but I understand steps 2, 3, and 4 as well. What policies are important, because I think the people who are closest to the pain are also closest to the solutions. I know what is needed, but I have the experience as an executive of not only attracting important dollars, federal dollars, but how to convert those dollars to real infrastructure. In other words, I have been able to attract, for example, dollars to invest near the New Carrollton Metro, been able to now convert that into a whole project that is growing 25,000 jobs and workforce housing. I've been able to build schools, build hospitals, build roads, create jobs. I was a part of the significant effort to bring back the FBI headquarters to the state of Maryland. And so I am best suited to represent us in this moment because we need people in place who not only understand policy. I do. I've worked with legislators across our state on many important policies, but we also need people who know how to implement, to be able to actually convert what we bring back to real positive change for Marylanders.
Prince George's County Executive Angela Alsobrooks is a candidate in the Democratic primary for the U.S. Senate. We invited her main opponent in the primary, Representative David Trone, who declined our invitation to join us today. But you are welcome to join us when we come back from a quick break. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
This is Baltimore's NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.
I'm Al Waller.
I'm Catherine Collinson.
And I'm Mihaela Vince.
In upcoming episodes of Clear Path, Your Roadmap for Life, we'll discuss ways to catch up on retirement savings and the importance of self-care. Tune in to WYPR's website and mobile app, all major podcast platforms, and transamericainstitute.org.
And welcome back. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up on the show tomorrow, downtown Baltimore is the fastest growing residential neighborhood in the city. So what's ahead for businesses as more workers work from home? Shalonda Stokes is the president of the Downtown Partnership of Baltimore, and she will join me to talk about a report issued last month on the state of downtown. Again, it's growing in residents, and it's shrinking with businesses, so we'll see what that means for the future. Plus, the acclaimed composer Nico Muhly will preview a concert that he's giving of his music at Emmanuel Church here in Baltimore. And if you've just joined us today, it's the latest installment in our series of conversations with the candidates. My guest is Prince George's County Executive Angela Alsobrooks. She's a candidate in the Democratic primary for the U.S. Senate. The incumbent in that seat, Ben Cardin, will retire next January. We did invite the other major candidate in the Senate primary race, David Trone. We invited him to be on the show with County Executive Alsobrooks today, and he declined that invitation. You have an open invitation as well. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org. And County Executive, let's go to the phones again to George. He's on the line in Pikesville. Welcome to the program.
Oh, yes. Yeah. First of all, good evening. And I'm excited. I'm excited about you stepping up and running for U.S. Senate. But my question is, I know you had a few challenges, but what has been your biggest challenge of this race?
Well, thank you so much, George, for weighing in. You know what? We had a challenge that we expected. It was that 50. We knew that that my opponent said he was going to spend $50 million plus dollars on the race, which meant he had the opportunity to talk to voters. But you know what? We are on course. I've been really grateful that we've been able to develop the kind of grassroots support. You know, I've been in living rooms 7 days a week virtually for the whole year. And I've been so thankful for the people who've opened their homes and backyards and who've invited their neighbors to talk to us. And so this has been a race that's been about the people. It's been a grassroots powered one. You can see the evidence of it now. If you drive around the polling centers, you'll see those green shirts all over the place. People, some of whom I've known most of my life and some I just met in the last few weeks, but they're out there. And that's what I think is going to be the not only the reason we win on Tuesday, but it's as it should be. This race should be about the people.
You made a point early in the campaign in some of your earliest ads that the average age of the people in the Senate is 64. That's more than 10 years older than you are. And the average net worth is, you know, millions of dollars in most cases. There are a majority of senators now who are millionaires. Mr. Trone, again, would say that although he's a very wealthy man and his business has been very successful, he didn't start out that way. He came from, you know, humble roots and stuff. What does it matter? Why should it matter that a very wealthy man is, you know, pursuing election to the Senate, you know, for, you know, presumably noble reasons?
Well, you know, I think that the Senate ought to reflect all of us. You know, I think that we all should be able to look in the Senate and see ourselves, again, of every race and gender and background. I think it makes our policies more complete. I think that America will be as good as its promise when we see all of us and all of our lived experiences reflected. Now, in terms of being able to buy a race, you know, I think that coming in 50, you know, we've seen this is the highest amount of money we've ever spent, seen spent in a race. And it's with the intention of buying the race so that no one would ever see on the airwaves that, you know, you can't open your mailbox or open your computer or turn on the television. I don't know that democracy should work that way.
You know, buying the race is interesting. A lot of folks use that terminology. So, but what does that mean? I mean, anybody who runs for office, I mean, you've had to raise $8 million. That's still a lot of money. I mean, you have to pay people. You have to pay for advertising. You have to pay for mailings. You have to pay for polls and all that kind of stuff. I mean, buying... is it possible to buy a race in this day and age, given the media landscape, given the political polarity we have? I mean, I don't know. Would you mind digging down a little bit about what that term means?
Yeah, and you know, I think that in this case, I don't think Marylanders will allow the race to be bought. I think that they will look at the record, but what it means is I think people can see that there is an unfair playing field that happens if the only people who can compete in races are billionaires. The people who go on television and buy up the airwaves, so that nobody else's message can be heard. That's what we mean. But in this case, again, it is the case that the grassroots messaging, I think, is really getting through. I think that we are going to see the people come out in this race. But let me go back to something you said. I have no problem with the fact that there are millionaires in the Senate. There should be. I just think all of us should be able to see ourselves in the Senate as well. When we think, for example, about some of the issues we have with our economy, it is that we've allowed large corporations who are paying fewer taxes than everyday hardworking middle class people, that we saw in a previous administration the corporate tax rate cut to such an extent that we created unfairness. When we look at people who are asking me, well, I go to the grocery store, my grapes are $9, I can't afford. Well, I think it's important to have everyday hardworking people in those places so that we don't have a system set up where the people who are advantaged are these large corporations, for example. So people who sympathize with that policy, I think that's the reason that we'll see the result in things like that.
Let's go to the phones again. To Spice is on the line from Baltimore City. Welcome to the program with County Executive Angela Alsobrooks.
Hi, thank you so much. I am calling as the chair of the Greater Baltimore Group of the Sierra Club, and we cover Baltimore City, Baltimore County, and Harford County. And I just wanted you to talk about what you would do to stop or reverse the climate crisis in Maryland. We know that the oceans are rising. We know things are not going well. And I do know that I know David Trone didn't take any money from developers. I know that you have done that. And I understand that, you know, when you're running, you take money from where you can get it a lot of times. Some people don't refuse to take money from certain corporations. But can you tell me about your platform on the environment?
I can. Thank you so much for calling in. So, as you mentioned, climate is not a tomorrow problem. It's a today problem. All of us who walked out of our front doors last summer and smelled wildfires, we now know that this issue around climate is literally at our front door. I have taken action as county executive. We've taken very aggressive action to make sure that we are protecting our climate. Things, for example, like we have invested over $1 billion in stormwater management under my administration as county executive to make sure that we are preserving, doing our part to preserve the streams and waters that flow into the Chesapeake Bay. I've also been the county executive that has overseen, for example, a composting program countywide, one of the only ones in the state, where we now have a countywide composting program. So we've been a leader in that regard. We've also invested in electric vehicles. I've worked with Senator Van Hollen, for example, who was able to secure about $20 million from the federal government. We now have a fleet of buses, electric buses, so we're working to really convert into clean energy. And we've made other investments there that will help us by 2035. To begin really cutting the emissions. So we have been I've been very aggressive as county executive. Now, I will support as a senator. The work that President Biden has done has been transformational. The Inflation Reduction Act, for example, one of the greatest investments we've seen in climate. I think the challenge that we have with that, the $350 billion that, by the way, has generated over $600 billion in new economic activity, the challenge is that we have to make sure that more and more communities, the ones that most need it and would benefit from it, some of our some of our impoverished communities where you have respiratory illnesses like the asthma that my daughter has. I think we have to be able to get that, to close the education gap. And encourage more and more people to be able to take advantage of, for example, some of the tax incentives that are offered under the Inflation Reduction Act to purchase electric vehicles and that kind of thing. So I'll be continuing to work to build upon not only the Inflation Reduction Act, but to fund the Environmental Protection Agency to make sure that we have policies in place that help us to continue to protect the climate. So I do have a very aggressive plan. We've worked in Prince George's. And let me just say this about contributions. I've raised money from the people of Maryland, and we have had donors who have contributed from $5 and more. And I've raised the amount of money we've needed to communicate with the public and nothing more. I am not for sale as a candidate, and I recognize that Marylanders are not for sale as voters. And so no amount of money influences what I do where policy is concerned. I will be acting in the best interest of Marylanders, as I have done and where Prince George's is concerned, and I'll continue to do that.
Here's an email from a listener named Angela, who says, first of all, bemoans the prevalence of big money in politics, and then talks about this candidate's willingness to work across the aisle. This is something that Governor Hogan is, you know, hinting that he'll make a centerpiece of his putative campaign. Mr. Trone has talked about this. I've done 27 of these interviews with candidates, and almost everybody says, I want to work across the aisle. But Angela says, you know, though the capacity to hold reasonable discourse is needed, having representation that unyieldingly adheres to the will of the people is a mandate. So there's a tension there between holding, you know, fast to your principles and doing what you were elected to do, and, you know, compromise. How do you balance those tensions?
Well, first I want to say to Angela that I'm really proud to have been endorsed, for example, by End Citizens United, the group that's working to get big money out of these elections. And I can tell you also that I am a person who's proud to have worked across the aisle. I've worked, for example, with former Governor Hogan to get things done. We didn't agree on a number of issues, but I was able to get over $400 million to invest around the FedEx Stadium. That's now grown to about $2.5 billion worth of new investment that we believe will help us to keep the Commanders in Maryland. And I've been able to work to make sure that we've been able to deliver for Marylanders. My father said something to me as a kid that I think is really important. He said, how you see something depends on where you sit. I think there are no truer words that have ever been spoken. I don't expect to find people in the Senate who agree with everything that I think, nor should they. But I have the sort of collegial attitude. I have the ability to work with people who agree with me and those who don't, which is why I have been able to deliver so much for Prince George's County, everything from the FBI headquarters, again, to billions of dollars worth of new investment that has been invested in communities that have been left behind. I'll do the same thing for Maryland. I will work with anyone who will work with me in the best interest of Marylanders, and I believe that I'll find those people, and they will be able to deliver great things for Marylanders.
Let's try to sneak in another call. Let's go to Margaret, who's calling from Baltimore with a question about health care. Welcome to the program with Angela Alsobrooks.
Thank you for taking my call. We all know how critical the ability to access health care is, especially quality health care. I wanted to ask what actions you've taken to improve healthcare access in your county and what you plan to do on this issue when you're in the Senate.
Thank you, Margaret. Healthcare, I believe every person, it should not be a privilege to have healthcare. All of us deserve to have both quality and affordable healthcare. And I've worked on this issue. I've prioritized it as a county executive. I built the first ever mental health and addictions care facility in my county when I realized that 70% of the people we were arresting were intoxicated when they arrived at the local Department of Corrections. I built the county's first cancer center. We just opened the doors to it in this past February. I have also built, now we just got $19 million rather, to build a new maternal ward, health ward, when I realized that maternal health care in Prince George's County, over 80% of the families in our county have to deliver babies outside the county. We're investing in maternal health care. And so this has been an issue that we have really made great progress. In fact, I've been able to draw over $150 million in just the last 2 years to invest in health care in Prince George's. I'll continue fighting on this issue as a senator, capping the out-of-pocket cost of prescription drugs. We have to continue not only cap the out-of-pocket cost of insulin at $35, but do it for more of our families. We got to bring down the cost of health care in this country. We can do that by continuing to build on the Inflation Reduction Act. But also, let's remember, let's go back to where we started. We have to absolutely block the reelection of former President Trump, who wants to roll back the Affordable Care Act. We have to block Larry Hogan can never, who will vote with this Republican caucus to roll back the Affordable Care Act. And let me just say, I'll be on that Health Education and Labor, Health Education, Labor and Pensions Committee, the one that former Senator Barbara Mikulski was on, who, by the way, I have her support in this race. And make sure that I am delivering for Maryland's families.
Last time you were here, we talked about, obviously, you support a law that would codify the restrictions on abortion as enumerated in Roe v. Wade. Are there tweaks to the ACA, to Obamacare, that are needed? I mean, are there further revisions, further improvements to that bill that you see down the road?
There are. I want to just start with you mentioned the Women's Health Protection Act codifying in federal law, women's right to choose. That would be the very first bill that I would co-sponsor on behalf of my daughter and children and young girls and women everywhere who deserve the right to have the freedom and privacy to make their own choices. The Affordable Care Act, I think we expand to add dental and vision and some of the other kinds of health care that are needed. Again, it is building on it, not doing what Donald Trump proposes, which is to roll it back. I think we have to continue building on it, and that's what I would be working to do.
Prince George's County Executive Angela Also Brooks is a candidate in the Democratic primary for the United States Senate. It's good to see you. Thank you for coming in, and best wishes for the rest of this. This is going to be a busy week for you.
Thank you so much, Tom. Yeah, listen, I got to ask you guys for your vote. I'd be a horrible candidate if I didn't. Get out and vote. Tuesday is Election Day. Early vote today and tomorrow. Thanks so much, everyone.
Early voting does end tomorrow, and Tuesday is Election Day. And up next, Erin Cox of The Washington Post has been covering Maryland politics for nearly 20 years, and she'll share her perspective on the Senate race on the other side of a quick break. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is Baltimore's NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.